Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Now, the mystery and folklore of fairy forts are still very much alive all around the island. Roads curve around to avoid them. Farmers don't plough through them or over them or cut down the trees. Historian Joe Kerrigan joins us now live from our Cork studio to explain these ancient mounds, the ring forts or raths, lisses, cashels in some places, and why they hold such power over us. Good morning, Joe Kerrigan.
Good morning to you, Oliver. I'm sorry you've got so much rain. It's usually us.
It usually is. What part of the world do you live in now, Jo?
I live out on the road towards Killarney, on the Cork Bounds, coming close to Killarney.
Oh, very nice. It must have been beautiful there this morning.
Oh, it is so beautiful down here. I don't know why you haven't all moved down here.
Because we'd ruin it for the rest of you, that's why.
That's true.
Come here, you came in from beautiful West Cork, but you have many doctorates and letters after your name. Tell us what you studied, first of all.
I'm not sure I should, really, because my first degree was, my first master's was in Victorian melodrama.
Was it?
Okay. It was, because I loved the idea of villains and heroines and superheroes and everything coming happy in the end. I thought mislit and modern depressing theatre was rather a dreary thing, so I thought, let's go for melodrama. And I loved melodrama. Then later on, when I'd finished at Cork, I went over to England and did a doctorate in travelling theatres. We had travelling theatres in Ireland for much longer. They continued until the 60s here in Ireland, travelling theatre. So I did a PhD on the ones over there. And then much later on, after I'd finished working for The Guardian and working on getting Rutland back its freedom, I went to Oxford and did a Master's in Medieval History, which I loved.
And there is where you start
studying
where
the ring forts.
Yeah.
I talked to them about going on to do another PhD there, and they said, shouldn't you be going back and discovering Ireland, because there's so much left to do there? So I came home.
How long were you away in total?
About 25 years.
Oh, lovely.
I was in England, and you sort of get used to it, though they do tend to make fun of you if you're Irish rather a lot.
Do you get used to that?
No, you don't.
You don't.
You're talking to them about splitting the atom or about, you know, something really important, and they laugh at you saying, you're not Irish, are you? And and you thought, you could at least listen to my intelligence instead of going on my words.
Some of them are grand, of course, as well.
Some of them are grand. I had some lovely friends there. But it was right to come back to Ireland and start looking at our own history.
You do it, Edward. What did you do for The Guardian, incidentally?
Oh, I was working on advertising.
Were you?
And I was chasing around. They sent me on Education Guardian for the advertising, and I was able to go up to all these old universities around Scotland and places like St Andrews and
Oh,
it was wonderful, staying in haunted inns and exploring places and talking to lovely people. I was probably no good at advertising, but I did love the people I met.
You didn't lose the accent at all then? You still sound lovely in Irish to our ears.
Well, one can, when it is necessary, adopt the accent of those to whom one is speaking. It depends on where one is. I'm not sure I could ever get the Dublin accent, though. I don't think I'd ever get that one.
Oh,
actually,
gosh.
I think you will.
You should have been in a travelling theatre yourself.
Wouldn't it be fun?
You could have done any of that. You seem to have lived several lives.
Yes, and this one's even more fun when you're going back into our own ancient time. You were talking about people getting a face peel or getting, you know, attention to their skin and watching, you know, do Facebook. And everyone's living in a virtual world now. And back in our time in Ireland, we lived with nature. We lived absolutely. You know, you're all shocked in Dublin at the moment because it's raining, because you never get rain. Dublin's always dry. We're so used to it, we don't even mention it.
Oh my God, and don't even mention Limerick. Sure, it's all the time. All the time coming down there.
It
feels like it's never going to be sunny again here at the moment. But come here, the fairy forts. And by the way, congratulations on the book, I should say, first of all. It is beautifully put together. There's lovely photographs as well by Richard Mills, who you know very well.
I should do.
He's your partner.
He's my husband.
He's your husband.
He's my husband.
And you were going out, was it? And then you disappeared into separate lives and then come back together. There's a nice story there.
We were up at university together in Cork. And then we had a silly row one night. I think I wanted to go to a theatre and he wanted to go to the cinema. And we didn't see each other for a very long time again. I always meant to. And we didn't.
What was the gap?
30 years.
You had a row at the cinema and the theatre and didn't.
Well, we had other ways to go. It does happen in your life, you know.
Does.
You have other ways to go in your life. And I was pursuing my studies. He was pursuing his rather brilliant career as a photographer. And we just went different ways. And I went over to continue my studies in England. And then I came back.
And?
and saw him again. And was as if I'd never left.
Did you seek him out?
I did.
Yeah.
I popped in and said, by the way, remember me? And
where did you pop into?
Oh, the examiner office in Cork, of course. Where else would
That's where he was, taking
That's
photographs.
That's where he was. Yeah. Yep.
And you went in and said, remember me? And he said, I do.
We went and had a drink together and that was it.
And how long ago was that?
That was, what, 25 years now. Oh, 22, 23 years now, almost.
We're supposed to be talking about ring forts, but my God, what a lovely, lovely romantic story that is.
Well, it worked out terribly well because we'd both got a lot of life out of the way and we both knew where we were going. And since then, the combination on our books, this is our seventh book, for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
We've worked on books together and we argue all the time. Richard wants a photograph taken this way and I want to talk about that one that expresses what I had in my writing. And we never stop arguing over them. And it's lovely. And the books are just coming one after the other. It's great.
And the Irish Fairy Forts, Portals to the Past, did you fight making that one?
Yes, it was difficult because Richard would want to get the best angle on something.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I would want to say, but look, I need to express this. I want to express what's secret and what's underneath it. And he said, well, how do you suggest I express what's secret and underneath it?
How do I photograph the underneath? You can't, says you.
Yes.
So there are lovely photographs with drones and so on, I presume you used.
Yeah, we had to use drones. Yes. You have to be careful where you use drones. There are places you're not allowed to use. I mean, you're not allowed to fly right over.
You have to be licensed
public
and
works.
Know what you're doing.
But with the others, it was a way to get things that people would never see because you don't always see the fairy fort until you're over it. And they go, gosh, yes, it is one.
Yeah, they are. There are missing from, like, along the roads you'll see them here and there, but you'd need to know where to look, wouldn't you?
You'd need to be standing on a high hill or using a drone and you suddenly realise that there are three or four or five in the valley below you. And that's where you start asking the question, hang on a minute, how come there are so many of them left? And that's the important thing.
That's the question.
Because, you know, in Ireland, you don't have to be told, Oliver, we're developing everywhere. We're digging up fields, we're building new houses, we're building factories. If there's demand on land everywhere. And the fairy forts are still there. Down near here, near Ringaskiddy, we've got a huge number of pharmaceutical and other industrial companies.
Yeah.
And yet in the middle, there's a tiny field with a ring fort in the middle of it, right in the middle of it. Mm. And no one dares touch it.
Brilliant. And there are tens of thousands of forts all around the country.
Yes, there are. They're everywhere. And they're much older than you think they are.
Really?
Now, the archaeologists talk about them and they say, well, some of them might have been inhabited 300 years ago, 400 years ago, but they're just ring forts. They're just earthen enclosures. Nothing else to see here. Move on. And I thought, that isn't the way you treat something as magical as a fairy fort. If you ever find something that's a fact, don't ever say, oh, it's just. It's never just. Pick it up, look underneath it, look around it, and then ask the sideways questions. Why is it still here? What was it really for? And why are people so afraid to touch them?
They're so embedded in the... By the way, are they in other countries as well?
You'll get a few in Scotland and a few in Wales, but mostly there they just call them forts, Roman forts, because they haven't really bothered.
Yeah.
Again, it's the archaeologists who just say, oh, there's nothing here. It's just an old shelter for cattle.
Why were they always circular? Why were they rings?
Ah, that's the Celtic thing, circular. We were always circular. It's how we represent everything.
Mm.
The squares and angles and hard corners come from a Roman time. They come from a later time in other countries. If you find a really old graveyard here, it'll be circular.
Really?
Yes.
It's an old Celtic pagan thing?
Yes, it is. Everything was always circular. All our ring forts, all our little stones, Bruna Boyne and Newgrange, you know, all of the old ancient sites that we have around Ireland, they're all circular as well. It's the magic circle. It's like you get in Wicca or the other pagan. Anyone who practices a pagan religion will know that you have the circle. You make the circle of power. You stand inside a circle to protect yourself, or you put a circle around something to keep it safe.
So going around in circles should be a good thing, actually.
It is a good thing. It is quite a good thing. It was later ideas coming from the Anglo-Saxons across the water or from the Romans who influenced them that things should be square and angular. No, they shouldn't. They should be circular.
The clue is in the name, place names all around Ireland, that there's going to be
a
fairy fort somewhere in the area, isn't there?
Yes, Ratanisca or Rathmore or Lisnasky or Lisarda. You'll find them anywhere. Lisdoonvarna, which is two in one. It's got the Doon and it's got the Lis in it. You get them all over the country.
Lis and Doon. And does the Lis and the Ra and Cashel, of course. Do they kind of describe different types of ring forts?
Yeah, they do. The Doon and the Cashel are usually the very large ones, which were the kingly ones, where a local monarch, as we had many kings in Ireland then, we still do, I think, they would have had big stone forts. And but they don't collect the stories, the way the smaller ring forts, the little magical hairy fluffy thing you see in a field all covered over with brambles and with fairy trees, that they're the ones that have the stories around them, the legends that make people afraid to damage them or touch them or do anything to move them. And the stories of what happens to anyone who dares to stupid enough to do it are frightening.
Can you give us an example?
Well, did you say Monaghan earlier on?
Oh, there was one in Monaghan. There was plenty of them in Monaghan, sure, there were little hills. And there is a famous story, isn't there? A famous case.
Yeah, there's one. What is it? Richard Lundy. He was a wealthy man living in Ardnagh. And he knocked down the fort. He was told not to. People told not to, but he did it. And while he was actually working at it, directing his workmen, his two horses that were pulling the gear for him dropped dead. And then his daughter lost her sight. She went blind.
Oh, my God.
And I think and all his stock died that year. All the animals he had on his farm died that year. And the story I got that from the school's collection, says shortly after, the name of Lundy was not in Ardnagh. The name of Lundy was gone forever. They disappeared. Oh, there's more in Monaghan. Crikey, there's a fort where if you pass it at night, there's a cat, a huge black cat comes out and attacks you. And it won't let you out of the area until you go away. And there's another place in Monaghan, it's just a place I'm mentioning because they got them all over Ireland, where they used to pull out, the people lived in a house near to the ferry fort, and the ferries would come in at night and use their sewing machine.
Right, okay.
They'd pull out the old treadle sewing machine, it's in the middle of the floor.
Destroy
and you'd hear that machine going. It's like that one in County Cork I knew. My father told me of some friends of his, the twins, the Conran twins. They had a poltergeist in their house because they were near the ferry fort, and he used to come out and turn the handle of the mangle. You won't know what a mangle is.
No, go on, tell us.
It's what you used before you had these modern washer dryers.
Squeezing out the clothes.
Yeah, you'd squeeze the clothes through it and you'd turn a handle and the sheets would be dry. Would you take a lot of the water out of the sheets? Well, they used to hear this at night, turning away in the kitchen, the mangle going crangle, grangle, grangle.
I can't imagine that. They were fierce efficient, but no health and safety whatsoever.
No, you didn't have health and safety. This was back in Ireland when we're still like that, really, Oliver. We believe in nature. It's our instinct. When you get modern Johnny-come-lately religions like Christianity from Rome, they came in and they tried to change all of our old ways where we believed in nature gods and nature spirits. There was someone you went to when you wanted your crops to grow. Yeah. There was someone you went to when you were hoping that you would lots of children. There was someone you went to when you wanted to make sure that your neighbours were nice to you. And you went to different gods for different things. And that was an Irish nature-based religion. Mm-hmm.
They kind of replaced the saints, didn't they? They made the saints have specific superpowers for each thing.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Bridget, she was our goddess of crafts and of all this time of year, all the young lambs and the sheep, and she was careful of everyone. But the Christianity couldn't get rid of her.
Mm. Saint so Anthony for finding things. They all have their individual powers. But come here, the folklore around it, is that commission in the 1930s that set up, that's important to collecting these stories,
that's
preserving them, passing them along.
Incredibly important. Yeah. I have to give credit to our very new Irish government at the time. It was after we'd become the Irish Free State, and we realised how much we'd lost by having a completely different culture, the Anglo-Saxon one from England, taking us over. And if you remember, during all those centuries that they were taking us over, we were trying to keep our own culture, but Irish was outlawed, and the old Irish legends and stories were outlawed.
But we snuck them through hedges. And
we did.
Called them out to each other because we weren't
staring
at
our phone. And we whisper them to each other, and you'd get beaten in school if you were found even using them.
Really?
So all the old legends went away. And the government realised this in the 1930s, and they commissioned schools, every school in the country. The children were told, and they were young children, to go home, find their granny, their grandfather, or any old neighbours, the oldest people they knew, and ask them to tell them stories, legends, traditions, customs, way of working, way of farming, everything that they used to do. And they got the most wonderful collection. You can still look them up. They're online now, which is wonderful.
They're all digitised, which is a great
thing. But you can see the handwriting, this beautiful handwriting from a school, and the children saying, and my grandfather told me this, and he was shaking as he told me because he still believed it.
And many still do.
Everyone still does.
That's why so many of them are still protected.
Are still there.
Yeah, and protected really by folklore, isn't it? Because some of them get destroyed when the planning allows. that has happened.
And that goes into trouble when they do. There's a wonderful story down on the Killarney Road beyond me, excuse me, where they had to cut through the edge of a big fairy fort, a tri-valleys one. There's three walls and a very valuable one. But they had to. And the resident engineer in charge at Kerry County Council said, please don't do it. And they went back and they tried again. And they said, I can't, because the road has to be a certain width and the road has to be, and you can't go in there. We have to do it. Yeah. So he said, all right, then. You're cutting a slice off the side of it. I want a wall made along, sheltering what's left, you know, bandaging it, if you like.
Yeah.
And on that wall, I want you to put in circles of stone to represent the three circles of that fairy fort.
Interesting.
And which was wonderful, because he wanted it left to show the fort that he was sorry and that, you know, we're doing what we can to recover. And, you know, even then, he couldn't get it done properly because the lad who drove the digger refused to do it. He flatly said, I am not going to damage that fairy fort.
We'd have to, have to get people in to do that sort of, who might know the stories.
Yeah, he said, well, I had to give him by leave and get in a stranger to do it, and he did it all right for us. And it's worked out since, he said. I think the good people accepted it themselves. You'd never call them the fairies. You'd always say themselves, or the good people, or the other people, or the other crowd, I think somebody calls it.
The other crowd?
Yes, Eddie Lennon, the folklorist, calls him the other crowd.
Yeah, he's the master of all of this.
He is.
Yourself and Richard, you had a your own experience at Arrah?
We did. We went out to one in North Cork. And we went around it. We were careful enough not to go in. And we went around the edges and said, right, we'll get a picture here, we'll get a picture there. And all Richard's camera batteries went dead. And we said, come on, Richard, you usually charge them. He said, I always charge them. They are never wrong.
And his spares.
Yeah, and his spares in the bag were completely dead. So we went back to the car thinking, what the heck is going on here? And the car wouldn't start. And now, look, he's used to driving. We tried everything. We tried this, we tried that, we tried the other. We went round to the back, went to the front. We undid things, we put it back. And it would not start. So we rang the AA and they said, well, it'll be at least 2 hours where you are. And while we were waiting, several farmers passed us in their tractors. And as they would do, they stopped to ask you, they do down there, can we help? Can we do anything to help? And when we told them what had happened, they all said the same thing. Well, what do you expect when you're annoying themselves?
With themselves.
And when the AA turned up, a really tough guy in the yard, he said exactly the same thing. Well, listen, if you're going to interfere with places like that, you must expect everything you get.
You should put your heart in your mouth. Tell us about Amascán Mariacht.
The Amascán Mariacht. Oh, yes. That's where something comes over and you don't know where you are. I must admit that I used to think this was just an excuse for getting home late from the pub. Honestly, dear, I couldn't tell where I was and I got lost. And then I thought it might have been the pooka who comes on people at night and throws them up on his back and gallops over a hill with them and dumps them in a bog. But the Amascán Mariacht is genuine because I know a fellow who studies the Gaera, which is an alluvial, flooded alluvial forest near us. And if you go in there, you forget what direction you're going in and you don't know where you are. And you can't find your way out. And I talked to a chap in a cafe one day and it terrified me. And we started talking about the Amascán Mariacht and he said he went down to a field. I remember he said it was down by the river and I hadn't ever ploughed it, but I thought, now a nice summer night, I'll go down and plough it.
Yeah.
And he went down, it was getting dark, and he went in and he started to plough and all of a sudden thousands of birds, he didn't know if they were geese or swans, they just came in the sunset and crowded around him and flew all around the tractor until he couldn't move. And he was very scared and they were there till it got dark and then they flew away and he thought, right, I'll get on with it. And the tractor wouldn't start. And then he thought, right, he got out, managed to get the tractor to start and tried to get out of the field and he couldn't find the way out. Now, he knew the field. He'd driven into it enough times. He knew perfectly well where the gate was. It wasn't there.
Mm.
And he went round and round and round and he was getting a sweat on, he said. And then he heard midnight chiming from the clock.
Totally disoriented.
From the church. And then he saw the gap and he got out.
The Amascán Mariacht.
Amascán Mariacht.
What do we believe is going on at these fairy forts? What it's an entry to the other world.
It's an entry to the other world, to themselves. It's their fort, because our tradition is that when the Celts came to Ireland, they drove the Tuatha Dé Danann, the fairy folk, underground.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And that they stayed there. Some say they played a trick on them for doing it by they saying, look, we'll take Ireland half and you have half. And the Tuatha Dé Danann, who were believed in good things, said, yes, OK, we'll do that. But they tricked them. They said, you can have the half under the ground.
Mm-hmm. Because there are souterrains, aren't there, little tunnels?
There are. They were probably used at some time for storage or for escape if you wanted to hide from people.
Yeah. Mostly storage. And they're really well built, aren't they?
Flagstones. They are. They're very strongly built. Most of them have been blocked up now, and you can understand why. You can't have kids going in and getting lost in or cattle falling into them or sheep and things. But there are souterrains underneath, and they believe that this takes you into the fairy world, the other world. And if you do go in there, you might not get back.
My gosh. There's a huge one. I don't know if you visited a big one overlooking Yall Bay, which is in the townland literally called Ra. We know it in East Cork, where the mammy's from. And it has a souterrain in it. We used to go into it as kids, but we warned to be careful, be Cúramach.
Oh, God, yes, you were always warned to be careful. I know everywhere I go, I'll get even people who say they don't believe in any of this rubbish and any of this nonsense, they say, but I do know one thing, I would never touch a fairy fort.
Wouldn't dare.
That would happen to you, and the stories of things being struck blind and people going lame and people, all their animals dying or their family going ill.
Archaeologically speaking, then, were they residences? Is this where people lived once upon a time and up to, what you said, 300 or 400 years ago? Would people still have been in them?
People could have been in them 300 or 400 years ago.
Yeah. Cranogues, is that?
Cranogues are the little islands in the lakes. They were just practical shelters. You built a little island out in the lake out of logs and you stayed there, and you could put up the drawbridge if anyone nasty came by, as there usually was, because every county in Ireland was always fighting with every other county. Yeah. Aren't we still doing it?
We are, in our own way.
But these enclosures were, first of all, they were shelters. You bring your cattle in there at night and you could build your little hut inside it.
That's what it is.
But they've been considered as fairy places far, far longer. One of our oldest documents, the Dinn Siancas, which is the lore of places. You remember when Christianity came to Ireland, they brought writing with them, writing down records. Before that, our ancient people, our druids, would only pass it down by word of mouth.
Yes.
Rather like spells. You don't pass something down by writing it down, because then anyone could share it. As you know, it's the ownership of stuff today with everything online. It's a difficult thing. Who owns something?
Yeah.
But then they always passed it down by word of mouth. And then when Christianity came, it had this common sense, along with trying to turn us into Christians, they had the common sense to say we should record these. And so they got all the druids and all the kings and all the knowledgeable bards and poets in and got them to tell them what they knew, and they wrote them down. So the actual stories of Dinn Siancas go back into the mists of time.
It's that
way
old.
Back, BC, far, old, far back.
Way, way beyond.
And that is where they actually mentioned the fairy forts and the fairy mounds.
Is there a reason why the little fairy forts that we see around the place tend to have hawthorn trees? Nearly always the same type of trees, aren't they? Hawthorn, elderberry.
The Scioge, the fairy tree. Yes, it is the fairy tree, and it has its own legends attached to it. They live in it. They live in them as well. The good people might inhabit them, because you have smaller good people who will go and look after different things. They look after streams, they look after rivers, they look after the trees, and particularly the fairy tree, the Scioge, which is just coming up to May now. I hope you will tell everyone to go out and wash their face in the dew on May morning and to go and gather branches of the May tree.
Wash your face in the dew? I've never heard that one. Really?
Did you not do it? Men should do it as
yet.
Well as
is
women,
there time?
You know.
My God.
It keeps you beautiful. You go out at dawn and you wash your face in the dew, and then you bring in the May blossom, the hawthorn blossom, which will be out for May Day.
The May bush.
Yeah, and that's the only time of year you're allowed to cut it, because if it comes into your garden or into your field, you're not supposed to touch it.
Only a small bit of it now, yeah.
You can bring it in on May morning and put it over the door of your house and put it over the door of barns and sheds to protect everyone for the year against the evil eye.
My God.
And if you're up on the Kerry border, you can go up to the Cahir and get water from the well there by the hawthorn tree, which is for your animals.
Wow.
And I still see people going up there, old farmers getting out with a lemonade bottle and filling it at the well and bringing it home for the cattle, or bringing their dog or cat up to the well to drink. It's lovely.
And the pattern days, that kept it going as well.
Yeah,
you have
it kept
the
it
red
going.
Trees.
People would come up there and would gather, and they would dance and they would sing and they would drink. And of course, the Catholic Church tried to stop it, so they couldn't. Well, you don't stop the Irish people having a good time.
Yeah,
so they put
fairies
a statue.
Never came for them, isn't it funny?
How could they? They are our basic religion. We call them, they're our nature spirits. They're our ancient spirits of nature, and we are more naturally aligned to them than we are to, for heaven's sake, to social media and scientific knowledge. Scientific knowledge still can't do a buggering thing about the weather. The fact is, you've got the weather in Dublin today, soaking you,
or the sea.
Yeah, or the sea, the powers, the ancient powers are still there.
And you're a historian, we need to reaffirm again, and you're into all of this.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, you wouldn't doubt. I was worried for a minute there when you were talking about the fairies. Your voice was starting to go, but you recovered now, so they must be they must be happy with you, I'd say.
Well, they thought for a minute, when I had to have a drink of water, they thought that I was perhaps going too far and telling you too much.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh dear, yeah, okay. I dedicated the new book to them, to the good people. I thought, say, listen, lads, I'm sorry if we interrupted you and if we're revealing anything, but I haven't revealed too much.
No, you haven't. Well, the batteries died, so there wasn't much you could reveal. Same thing happened to Kevin, who's in touch here. Same experience for guests regarding batteries going dead. I'm a professional photographer, was taking pictures inside the Knockin Dolmen in County Waterford, had three spare batteries with them, all of them went dead 5 minutes, says Kevin.
Lovely.
But for the rest of us, we can indulge without upsetting themselves, because the new book is called Irish Fairy Forts, Portals to the Past by Joe Kerrigan and Richard Mills, that's himself, and the O'Brien Press published them. Thanks a million, Joe Kerrigan.
It's a pleasure talking to you, Oliver.
Likewise. Enjoy the sun below. Slán agus fós.